committee. Today's date is March 28, 2011. The time is 9:02 in the morning. With us today are Senator Kukesh, Senator Pasfan, Senator Geisel, myself, Wilkowski, Senator Myers on his way. We have three pieces of legislation before us, two of which have been previously heard. The first is Senate Bill 53, reestablishing a state commission on the status of women. Second, House Concurrent Resolution 6, designating April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And the third is Senate Bill 104, relating to manufactured homes. We'll begin with Senate Bill 53, sponsored by Senator Davis. Welcome, Senator Davis. Last week, we heard from nearly half dozen Alaskans in support of this bill. We've also heard received nearly a dozen letters or emails in support of it. I have not received any proposed amendments to the bill. The bill does have a fiscal note, which we've received. It also has a finance referral, I would note. Senator Davis, do you have any final comments for us? Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you very much, and to the committee. I'm sorry I was not able to be present on Thursday when you heard the bill, but I'm appreciative that you have brought it back again. There are many women that have some concerns and have asked that this bill be introduced again. It was introduced a session ago, but it did not make it through the legislature. There is a note on it because you have to hire an executive director and then they had some staff. That's something that's negotiable and could be worked out probably in finance as to what the level of staffing should be. And there'll be other people that want to testify. We've gotten other calls, many calls, since they met before you on this meeting, supported it, and haven't had any non-response people saying that they are against the commission. I know that the Women's Commission in Anchorage is still quite active, but for some years ago when they rolled it into another commission, it just sort of went by the wayside, and people feel that there's a need to resubmit it.
Okay, thank you, Senator Davis. Are there questions for Senator Davis? Okay, seeing none. Bill does have a referral to the Finance Committee. What's the will of the body? Is there a motion to move the Senate Bill 53 version A? Yes, Senator Geisel.
Mr. Chair, before we move it, I have done some looking into this, and I do have some comments.
Okay.
I was actually taken back to March 2nd to a press release that you put out from this committee, and it was to take a look at more effective and efficient government. And in that press release, you talked about giving our government programs a good hard look, courage to make the tough decisions. President Stevens commented, we want the most efficient and effective government possible. And then one of the questions you posed in that press release is, where is there waste or redundancy? So my office took a look at women's issues. And there is, in fact, a women's council or a women's commission in Anchorage and 25 other women's organizations all over the state, covering all different professions. I mean, it was pretty interesting research to see all the different organizations. I also discovered that it was actually Governor Knowles that defunded this commission back in 1996. And looking at the cost of this commission, $500,000 a year, I understand that there are some folks that think we need this, but I think that it actually is a redundancy. We do have these organizations already present looking at all of these issues, and they're all over the state. So those are the comments I just wanted to put on the record, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Geisel. And let us note, we're joined by Senator Meyer. Further, we're discussing Senate Bill 53. We've heard from the bill sponsor. Any further comments on the bill? Did you care to respond, Senator Davis?
I just want to make one comment. It was not Governor Knowles that defunded the Women's Commission. The commissioner was merged into another commission, and the name I don't have in front of me.
It's Governor Hickel. Actually.
It was actually Hickel that did that, but not Knowles. But they thought that we could merge those two and they would work together. But what happened is the one group felt that their needs were not being met, and so they just stopped participating. And that's why it went away. It was not defunded by Knowles at all. It was quite active under him.
Okay, thank you. Do I have a yes, Senator?
Well, I was just wondering if Senator Giesel made any inquiry into whether the waste and inefficiency is in the great number of programs that you've discovered, rather that there might be greater efficiency and more responsibility by having it in one Alaska Commission on the Status of Women.
Can I respond, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely.
All right, thank you. Sorry, I didn't want to mess up the protocol. You know, these other organizations are all over the state, and they're very specific. Here's Alaska Women in Travel, Alaska Tradeswomen, Fairbanks Native Association, Federally Employed Women, Women in Community Service, Women's Fisheries Network, the Women's Writers Group and Jazz Ensemble in Ketchikan. These are very diverse groups addressing specific issues, and they're all over the state, which to me means they're addressing those specific groups, those specific needs in those locations. And that seems much more effective. You know, government is most effective when it's closest to the people. And so I don't see that a large state organization, which meets four times a year, has three staff people, we're paying not only their salaries but also their benefit packages. This is pretty expensive undertaking when it's already being accomplished by smaller groups closer to the people.
Well, and I would just point out that according to the sponsor statement, there on average women earn 66.6% of what men earn in 2009, which was the same in 2006. I would also note women and children continue to be the most common victims of domestic abuse. We have horrendous issues with domestic violence, rape, sexual assault in this state. I appreciate what they're doing on the smaller scale. I wouldn't say that it is working on the smaller scale. So I do think it's important that we continue this dialogue and that this bill go forward. And with that, I would solicit a motion to move Senate bills. Yes, Senator Meyer?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Did we ever get a fiscal note on this?
We did, Senator Meyer.
Okay. I was looking for it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And obviously, this is an issue for the finance department and not us, but this looked like quite a bit of money for a new commissioner. But, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with your comments, and I guess we'll let how we pay for it, leave that up to the finance guys.
Okay. Any further comments, discussion? Is there a motion to move Senate Bill 53, Version A, from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Is there objection? Okay, seeing none, the bill is moved. Okay, thank you, Senator Davis.
Thank you very much.
Take a brief at ease. Okay, we're back on the record. We'll now go to House Concurrent Resolution 6, designating April 2011 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. This resolution is sponsored by Representative Costello. Last week, we heard testimony from Rick Svobodny, Deputy Attorney General, and Peggy Brown, Executive Director of the Network on Domestic Violence, both of whom spoke in favor of the resolution. I think we can all agree that bringing greater attention to sexual assault is an important goal. Thank you for bringing this bill to us. I have not received any proposed amendments to the bill. We have with us again Representative Costello and her aide, Jane Albert, here to answer any final questions. If you come forward and put yourself on the record, and we'll see if the committee has any questions for you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Mia Costello. I'm a representative for District 27.
And any questions by the committee? Okay. Any final comments, Ms. Costello?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate you taking time to hear this resolution, and the month of April is just right around the corner, and I look forward to hopefully having it be successful in getting through the process. And I did want to mention that on Thursday, the Governor's Choose Respect rally is going to be taking place on the Capitol steps, and I would like to invite you and hope to have you there to join the rest of us who feel that this issue is really important to bring attention to it. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Any committee discussion or comments? Is there a motion to move House Concur Resolution from committee with attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion? Any objection? Okay, seeing none, the bill is moved from committee. Let's take a brief at ease. But back on the record, we'll now move to Senate Bill 104, sponsored by Senator French. This bill would give owners of manufactured homes better access to traditional mortgage financing. We have Senator French's staffer, Andy Modero, here. Welcome back to the State Affairs Committee. Andy, if you could put yourself on the record and give us your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Willikowski, members of the committee. For the record, Andy Modero, staff to Senator French. Senator French apologizes for not being able to be here today. He had another meeting he had to attend. Senate Bill 104 establishes procedures to convert manufactured homes to real property through a defined process within the Division of Motor Vehicles. This change will give owners of manufactured homes better access to traditional mortgage financing, which often features lower interest rates. Currently, when a manufactured home is affixed to a permanent foundation on land owned by an individual, the vaguely defined title surrender procedure used by the division lacks a record notice. Without this record notice, homeowners are often left with unmarketable titles, and lenders then hold unperfected security interests in the property, placing all parties at risk, the buyer, the lender, future buyers, sellers, you name it, in the future. Conversion will help increase home values for consumers, give security to lenders, and provide fixed procedures for the DMV to follow. Nothing in this legislation requires the conversion of a manufactured home, leaving that choice up to consumers, so things can continue as they currently proceed today, if an individual chooses that as what they would prefer to do. Many Alaskans live in these manufactured homes. This legislation makes it so individuals who have homes built on their property can be treated the same as those with manufactured homes. It puts them into the same category following that procedure. And Senator French urges support for this legislation. If it pleases the committee, I'm happy to go through the legislation.
If you could, it is a fairly lengthy piece of legislation. If you could walk us through, that'd be great.
Absolutely. And there are experts online, too, if there's any technical legal questions that the committee has as we proceed. So Section 1 of the legislation deals with findings and purposes. I think in this case in particular, they're worth pointing out. Subsection B says the purpose of this act is to establish a clear statutory procedure for converting to real property manufactured homes that are affixed to real property, and also for severing manufactured homes from real property in case someone who did the conversion at one point wants to go back and have their mobile home covered under the DMV title. Sections 2 and 3 add manufactured homes that have been converted to real property to the definition of real property in banks and financial title. Section 4 on page 2 and 3 of the legislation adjusts the definition of, changes mobile home to manufactured home, just as a conforming change for the bill.
And Andy, let me stop you there. And are we losing anything by taking out by changing mobile to manufactured? Does that, are we losing anything at all there? Or what? Talk about the significance of that.
Absolutely. Chair Willikowski, my understanding is no. Mobile home, you know, with the roots of mobile homes back in the day being, you know, travel trailers and things of that sort, my understanding is that is just a more modern term for the structures.
And it, and I see later on you have, there is a definition of manufactured home, but it refers to another chapter. Do you have the definition there by any chance?
I do. A manufactured home is a structure transportable in one or more sections that in the traveling mode is 8 body feet or more in width or 40 body feet or more in length, or when erected on site is 320 or more square feet. And it's built on a permanent chassis and designed to be used as a dwelling with or without a permanent foundation, when connected to required utilities, and includes plumbing, heating, air conditioning, electrical systems contained in the structure. Continuing on, the term includes a structure that meets all of the requirements of this paragraph, except the size requirements and with respect to which the manufacturer voluntarily files a certification required by the United States Secretary of Housing and Urban Development and complies with the standards established under 42 USC. I know HUD does a bunch of stuff regulating the manufacture of these homes today.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Section 5 on page 4 references the current definition of manufactured home in the secured transactions title used for use in the banks and financial titles of the statute. That was the definition we just went through. Section 6, so on page 4, amends the current definition of mortgage loan to include manufactured homes that have become real property. Section 7 on page 4 adds a definition to include as real property manufactured homes that have become real property under this legislation. A bunch of the sections do that minor change, whether it be in civil procedure, everything else, and you'll see that pop up a lot. Section 8 on page 4 starts dealing with Title 28. This is the motor vehicle title, and it requires the Department of Administration to file and maintain an index of manufactured home documents related to the conversions provided by this bill. We'll go through those sections now. Section 9 on page 5 lists what the department's records must include. It's a pretty lengthy list, as you can see. Section 10 changes mobile homes to manufactured homes, again, the definitional change, and it references the next section, Section 11, which on page 6 prohibits DMV from issuing a title on a manufactured home that has been affixed to real property in the process that is described. Again, outlining that once this conversion has occurred, DMV no longer titles the manufactured homes unless a severance process goes through. Section 12 changes manufactured statement of origin to manufactured certificate of origin. I'll refer to that as MCO as we proceed. My understanding is that's just a term of art that's been modified over the years. Section 13 allows the holder of an MCO to deliver that certificate to the DMV to facilitate, or to anyone to facilitate the conveyance or encumbrance of a manufactured home. Moving on to section 14 and 15, these sections work to keep the conversion process optional. As mentioned, nothing requires anyone to go through these processes. 14 prohibits the department from canceling a certificate of title merely because the manufactured home is affixed to real property, whether or not it, you know, without the process under this bill having been gone through. 15 states that a certificate of title is to be used as evidence of what it says, even if the home is physically affixed to real property. Moving on to section 16, this is one of the two meaty sections of the bill. This is at the very bottom of page 6. This provides DMV procedures for these conversions. So section, proposed section 2810-262 sets out procedures for canceling an MCO and making the conversion to real property. 263, page 7 through 8, sets out similar procedures for canceling a certificate of title. 264 starting on page 7. Sets out procedures for converting manufactured homes to real property if the manufactured home is not covered by an MCO or a certificate of title, or if that MCO or certificate of title cannot be located. In these cases, it requires that the individual who owns the home post a bond to, you know, protect any interests that other parties may have in case that this procedure is done in error. But that's the structure of this. That bonding requirement is currently used by the DMV for vehicles without clear defined ownership. 2810-265, we're now on page 9, sets procedures for severing a manufactured home from real property and making it personal property once again and therefore subject to Title 28. 266 on page 10 and 11 set out the application requirements for affixation and severance. And then, as you can see, if you go down, it includes name, residence, mailing address of the owner, information about liens, whether it's new or used, and whether or not there's any information that may affect the validity of the title known by the owner. In addition, it requires an affixation affidavit. We'll get into that later in the bill, but that's another key part of the bill that makes this conversion happen. So that was 266. 2810-267 on page 11 sets out the procedures that must be followed for the portion of the application that evaluates the presence or lack of presence of liens and encumbrances on a manufactured home prior to the conversion occurring. That's one of the provisions in 266, and it's just outlined in more detail here. 2810-268 indicates the time when the requirements of affixation outlined in this section are considered to be satisfied. It requires that the application be filed with DMV within 30 days of the affixation affidavit being recorded, which we'll review next. If the application is accepted by the department, then the manufactured home should be conveyed or encumbered as real property at that time. Moving on now to page 12, there's some terms defined in the section under 2810-269. So that closes out section 16 of the bill. Moving on now to section 17 on page 12. This relates to liens and encumbrances on manufactured homes in certain instances that arise under this legislation. Section 18 on page 12 prohibits canceling certificates of title when a lien or encumbrance is still outstanding. So it's protection for lien holders on a certificate of title. Section 19 on page 12 changes statutes to reflect that if a manufactured home has been converted to real property, then liens or encumbrances are governed by real property laws. Section 20, now on page 13, makes a reference to mobile home to include manufactured home. In this case, manufactured home was not swapped out, but just added to the definition. Section 21 on page 13 adds the definition of manufactured home earlier referenced in the banking law to the motor vehicle title, as which all of the preceding sections, I think it's been about 10 now, have been related to. Sections 22 to 24 on page 13 and section 25 on page 14 make conforming changes to municipal taxation, Landlord-Tenant Act, residential real property transfers, and escrow transactions when these mobile homes have been converted to real property. Again, this is just part of the process of making them treated like traditional homes. Section 26 outlines some guidelines for the conversion of property titles in Alaska statutes. This is the other meaty section of the bill. We're now on page 14. 3485.110 lists criteria necessary for a conversion. In particular, I want to point out that it requires ownership interest in the land and ownership interest in the manufactured home to be the same, or for the manufactured home to the owner of the manufactured home to have a 20-year lease on property. This allows individuals who don't own the property through which they're fixing their mobile home to also be able to convert it to real property and benefit from the traditional mortgage financing under the legislation. 3485.020 describes the effect of converting manufactured home to real property under this title. And 3485.040, now on page 15, relates to that 20-year lease provision that I mentioned above. 3485060 describes the affixation affidavit, and this is on page 15 through 16. 3485070 on page 17 describes owner statement required for the affixation affidavit. Thirty-four eighty-five oh eighty, also on page 17, clarifies that affixing a manufactured home to real property doesn't affect liens or encumbrances when the manufactured home was titled under the motor vehicle title unless those liens or encumbrances are released. 3485090, starting at the bottom of page 17, ties in with the DMV portion of the process and relates to how this affixation affidavit shall be transferred to DMV as part of an application through DMV. 3485100 on page 18 states that an affixation affidavit is relevant in the process described by this legislation, but that it on its own does not change the property. Sections 3485110 through 130 relate to severance affidavits, and these can be found on page 18 and 19, and it directs each person having an interest in a property to record a severance affidavit through this process. And again, it describes an application procedure, and section 130 describes how this is conveyed to DMV. 3485140 requires an affixation affidavit and severance affidavit to be acknowledged like real property conveyances and to be in recordable form. 3485150 on page 20 establishes when a manufactured home is considered to be permanently affixed. You can see here it's anchored to real property by a permanent foundation and some other such standards, including some designed by HUD. 3485190 defines some terms in this section, and 3485195 provides a short title for it, the Manufactured Home Property Act. Now in the bottom of page 20, on section 27, this directs the recorder to record affixation or severance affidavits if they meet certain specified requirements. Section 28 on page 21 amends the definition of goods in the Alaska Real Installment Sales Act to include manufactured homes. Section 29 allows the Department of Administration to craft regulations to implement this act. Section 30 provides a savings clause, and it makes it clear that any claim that exists under law before January 1st, 2012 is not impaired by this act. That is the date in which this act comes into effect, though Section 31 gives the Department of Administration the authority to create regulations immediately, though they become effective on that date. And that completes the brief run-through.
All right, thank you. Is this the same bill that came before us last year? In the Senate Judiciary Committee?
Chair Willikowski, it's very similar. It's slightly different. Work was done over the interim with DMV to try to alleviate some of the concerns they brought up at that time. And I think, I'm not going to speak for them, but I think we're there today.
Has there been any opposition to this bill that you're aware of?
Senator Willikowski, a couple years ago there was some issues with the legislation with DMV worrying about the procedure being too cumbersome. And we'll hear from them today, I hope, if they're online. And
the manufactured homes organizations support this bill, I would assume.
Yeah. We've gotten letters of support from Wells Fargo and Alaska Bankers Association. I also included in the backup material a manufactured housing resource guide from Innovations in Manufactured Homes from the National Consumer Law Center, which outlines some of the benefits for these conversions.
It's a complex piece of legislation, but I think it's an important piece of legislation that will have a real impact on the lives of a lot of Alaskans. So I want to thank you. I know it was hard work to do this bill, so I want to thank you for taking the time to do that. Is there a question, Senator Pasternak?
Sure. You know, and I agree that this is a significant step for this type of a piece of property, but has the title company industry weighed in? You know, they're the ones that are going to have to be doing all the recordings. The banks are going to rely upon the title companies for purposes of, you know, the chain of title to make sure that they will provide loans. So I'm just wondering if the title companies believe that this process will lead to a, you know, marketable real estate.
Senator Pasquin, through the chair, it's a great question. You know, currently there are procedures that are outlined, but they lack that record notice. And from my understanding, that record notice is what's crucial. I have not personally talked to any title companies. We do have people online from Wells Fargo who I know work very closely with those organizations, and they may be able to provide clear guidance. But I personally have not spoken with the title industry.
I mean, in part, people file documents kind of all the time that don't necessarily accomplish what they think that they may be accomplishing. Mm-hmm. And so, I, you know, it's ultimately before a bank's going to loan on it, I would suspect that if it's real property, they want to have a title company say that whoever owns it and what that full interest is, and particularly where you have a severance process here where you can sever it from the real property, you know, that that's where the title companies are going to be in the middle of that for a long time. So just
it's a fair point. And if you could maybe by before the next hearing get us talk to some title companies and see if they can get it, we can get some input from them at the next hearing. I think that'd be helpful, or simple as a written statement of support or concern on their part. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Meyer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. I need to go back to the basics here if we can. So if you have a mobile home on a lot, a city lot, like it's in an R5 area, I'm assuming then that the mobile home is titled as a vehicle through DMV, and then the land that it's on is considered real property, and you pay property taxes on that as real properties. Is that correct?
Senator Meyer, through the chair, that's my understanding. DMV, I believe, could provide a clear understanding of the procedure they use today.
Okay. And then, so what this would do would be able to affix the mobile home to the land, which then it can be comparative now to a house, and so the mortgage companies now can provide better financing, I would imagine. And so it sounds all good, both from a bank standpoint and ultimately and most importantly, the consumer. And I would imagine that there's some inspections done to make sure that these mobile homes are affixed to some kind of foundation before this happens.
Senator Meyer, through the chair, if I can get back to you on details about that, that would be probably the clearest way to do it. I do know that there was that one section which relates to how affixation must occur, and that includes being affixed to a permanent foundation and things of that sort. Not certain how the regulations would be drafted on that front or if there's other language in the statute. But.
And Mr. Chairman, kind of a different subject, and again, maybe as we talk to the mortgage lenders and maybe in realtors, a big concern in my district with mobile homes is frankly, a lot of them, not a lot of them, but some of them catch, more of them catch on fire than, say, regular homes. And I don't know if it's because of the heating process or trying to, you know, unthaw their pipes or what it is. But actually, we've had several deaths in my district from mobile home fires. And so I don't know, as they inspect these trailers to see if they're affixed to the property, they can also inspect to make sure they have working fire alarms. And that may be a totally different subject, but it is an area of concern of mine.
Fair question. Okay, other questions for the bill sponsor? Let's go to Whitney Brewster, because there have been some questions directed that I think we've heard you may be able to answer. Are you there, Whitney?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it's my understanding under this bill that the DMV would be simply putting in its records whether or not the manufactured home has been affixed or has been severed. As far as inspections are concerned, it's my understanding that the DMV would not be the responsible party for completing those inspections. If I'm incorrect, I'm sure that the sponsor will let me know. With that, I'm happy to answer any other questions that the committee has.
Senator Meyer has a follow-up.
I do have a question, and thank you, Whitney, for being with us today. So, again, my example, which happens a lot in my district in an R5 area where you have mobile homes placed on a city lot, the mobile home itself is considered a vehicle and is titled as a vehicle through DMV. Is that how that works?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, that is correct. The way that the statute is currently written, it's permissible. An individual is not required to title their mobile home, but they certainly can if they so choose for $100. We will issue them a title. And it is indeed titled as a vehicle, whether or not it's affixed or not on property.
And if I may, can you tell me the advantages and disadvantages of getting a title on your mobile home? You say it's optional. I would think you would want that, wouldn't you?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it is an ownership document, and I'm certain lien holders would be very interested in having that lien stated on the title and in the DMV's records. So that would be one benefit. But if you own the mobile home free and clear, there really is no significant advantage that I can see for having a title on a mobile home or manufactured home.
Okay, and if I may, and I'm probably getting way out of line here. So when the city assessor does the property taxes, do they look at the mobile home then as a vehicle or as a house, or I guess it would depend on if it's affixed or not affixed?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, that's kind of an unfair question. Okay, thank you very much.
It is an interesting question. My guess would be they would do it, since it's a vehicle, they wouldn't appraise it. But under this bill, it would become real property, and so they would appraise it.
So they might be raising their taxes.
Yeah. And I think this issue came up last session. I think actually I had asked a similar line of questioning. And
smart man.
And that was my concern back then, as I'm recalling this now, was that this could potentially raise the property taxes of these. But I guess there's an option of whether or not to do it, and they can choose not to do it. Yes, Senator Passman.
If the mobile home remains a vehicle, does it need to be registered every 2 years?
Whitney, did you hear that?
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Senator Pascvan, the DMV does not register mobile homes. So the answer is no.
So the only thing DMV does is issue the title as a vehicle, and as you say, if there's a lien holder, then that would be reflected on the title, but that's the sole involvement DMV has with it.
That is correct.
And Ms. Brewster, a question came to my mind then on insurance. If under current law, does someone get auto insurance for their manufactured home, their mobile home, or do they get homeowners?
Mr. Chairman, that is not a requirement for mobile homes. Insurance is not required.
And if someone wants to take out, and you may not know the question to this, Whitney, but I'll try it anyway, and maybe the bill sponsor can answer it. If someone wants to take out a loan now on a manufactured home, I'm assuming they can't get a mortgage. Would they get a vehicle loan then? Do you know the answer to that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that question.
I'll ask the bill sponsor then.
Thank you, Chair Wilikowski. Yes, that's one of the main purposes for this legislation, to enable owners of manufactured homes to be able to get real property loans, which in the backup material you'll see often feature just nationwide loans that are, you know, 2 to 5 percentage points lower than what they can get today.
And then on the property tax issue, do you know that question? If someone has a mobile home on their property right now, do you have any idea how it's appraised or how municipality deals with that?
Chair Wilikowski, I don't know how it's done now. I'm happy to look into it. I do know that under this legislation, manufactured homes which are affixed to real property will then be included in the value of the land. So, but as for how it's done now, I'd be happy to get back to you on that.
And I believe that most mobile home parks or manufactured home parks are actually owned by a single landowner, and then they lease out the land. So would the mobile homeowner then just own the manufactured house on the property, or do they own, is it sort of like a condominium or a zero lot line where they own that particular space, plot of land? Do you have any idea how that works?
Senator Wilkowski, I do know that there are some mobile home parks which, you know, ownership of the land is not the same as ownership of the house. In this legislation, there is that provision which allows someone with a 20-year lease on the land to go through this conversion. With less than that 20-year lease and without some of the other conditions being met, someone who is renting a spot year to year, month to month, would not be eligible for this conversion just because of the way the process goes through.
Okay. Yes, Senator Passman.
It's probably an obvious question, but this does not affect the zoning issue of where a mobile home may or may not be located, whether it is or is not affixed to the foundation.
Senator Pascal, through the chair, I'm not aware of any zoning issues. I can look more into that if you'd like.
No, I mean, I just am assuming that this, in other words, the mobile home can only be affixed to a foundation if it's in compliance with the zoning. And again, that's part of the title company issue mm-hmm. that I would assume that that would have to be addressed.
Hmm. Okay, and any other questions for the bill sponsor? We have a few people signed up to testify. We have a few people from Wells Fargo signed up. The first person is George Ginsburg. Mr. Ginsburg, are you there?
Yes, Senator, this is George Ginsburg. Thank you. I'm an attorney with McGlinchey Stafford, an outside law firm, representing Wells Fargo. And they asked me to testify in part, sir, because I had a great deal to do with the drafting of this legislation, not only for Alaska, but in other states as well. And to the extent that I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do so. Before I do, though, if you don't mind, let me comment on just one or two things that have been said.
Absolutely. If you could shed any light at all.
The background, to make it simple, is that in Alaska, the ownership interest in a manufactured home, like the ownership interest in a car, is documented by listing the owner's name on a certificate of title. Now, as Ms. Brewster said, it's optional. But frankly, if I'm an owner and I want to sell that home, and for whatever reason I don't have a bill of sale for it, a certificate of title is the only document that's going to show that I own the home. And if I don't have one, I may have a home and no way to sell it. So I think, frankly, that one should have it. But in any event, that's the only way other than just the bill of sale to document ownership. And like a car, it's financed by having the lender's name listed as the secured party on the title. Unlike a car, though, as we've been discussing, it can be permanently affixed to land. And once it is, the intent in most states, and I assume in Alaska as well, is to treat it as real property, which means transferring ownership by a deed and financing it by a mortgage or deed of trust. With respect to whether it does make a difference about how one in fact finances it in the real world, the answer is yes, and that's critical. One of the things that's behind the bill really is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac will not consider a loan secured by a manufactured home to be a real estate loan, and therefore they won't buy such a loan unless the state law has a way, a statutory way, of making clear that a manufactured home, once affixed to real estate, is considered real estate legally. In Alaska, unlike the vast majority of states, there is at the moment no formal statutory method of eliminating a certificate of title and converting a home to real property when the home is permanently affixed. Instead, we have a system at the moment where there's a somewhat defined but vaguely defined almost informal surrender procedure. But the problem is that there's no record notice. And what this bill is designed to do is it's designed not only to establish a procedure at the end of which the law will make clear this is real estate, and before that, this is personal property. But the public records that one can go to, the records of the Division of Motor Vehicles and the land records, will be consistent so that one can find out which it is. And again, as was said in the beginning, this is a completely optional procedure. Not only does this not change the law that one has to apply for a title before conversion, but even if it's permanently affixed to land, a homeowner doesn't have to convert, can keep the title if he or she wants to. But, of course, the downside to doing that is the homeowner is not going to be able to have that financed by a real estate loan. At most, that can be financed by a loan just secured by the home itself as personal property. But frankly, there are relatively few lenders in the country that do that anymore, and those that do will charge rates that are a lot higher than you can get on a real estate loan. Similar legislation was adopted last year in Missouri and North Dakota, and prior to that in other states. So that, and I appreciate the indulgence, is the background of this. And to the extent that I can answer any questions, I'll be happy to.
Thank you, Mr. Ginsburg. Appreciate your testimony. Questions? Okay, I see none. If you could hold on the line, though, Mr. Ginsburg, because we may a couple more people. There's one more person signed up to testify, and if you could just hold on the line for a few more minutes, we'd appreciate it.
I'd be delighted to.
Thank you. Next up, signed up to testify is Ethan Horman. Okay, we're having a little hard time hearing you. That's better.
There you go.
Okay.
So I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you guys today, and on behalf of Wells Fargo, I appreciate the opportunity to submit some testimony in support of Alaska Senate Bill 104. Senate Bill 104 will amend state law in Alaska to provide a formal method of eliminating certificate of title to a manufactured home and converting the home to real property when the home is or will be permanent affixed to real property. And allows you to obtain a new certificate of title when a home previously affixed to real property is later physically severed from it. To kind of go into Alaska's current statutes, they do not meet eligibility requirements to sell mortgage loans for manufactured homes to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, including the process to legally classify the home as real property and placing the lender in first lien position, which is kind of the drive behind this whole bill. Wells Fargo, in fact, has had to turn away business to potential borrowers because Alaska does not have a clear method of converting a factory-built home to real property. Especially older manufactured homes that do come back to the market for resale, there's no chain of title, which has been discussed here previously. Senate Bill 104 has interest and would bring state definition of manufactured homes into accordance with HUD definitions to create a system for title transfer and property conversion. Additionally, it would create a means for titling manufactured homes that have been affixed to property, but the title cannot be found. So a lot of these things I think we've already kind of gone over and just kind of cementing how this would affect Wells Fargo and some of its clients that we've dealt with in the past. We feel the bill helps manufactured homeowners who have their manufactured home already affixed to real property be better able to gain access to credit and able for easily sell their homes. And also help manufactured homeowners in the state increase the value of their homes by allowing them to convert their manufactured homes to real property, including manufactured homes not covered by certificates of title or for which the certificate of title cannot be found. Also helps lenders gain perfect security interest in manufactured homes, as well as help the Alaska Division of Motor Vehicles by putting in place a formalized procedure for canceling title when a manufactured home is put on a permanent foundation. Those are some of the ways that we feel the bill would help and assist customers, clients, and current manufactured homeowners, and also future manufactured homeowners, that we have the ability to transfer that title in these cases. If you guys have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions for you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Horman. Are there questions? Yes, Senator Myers, a question.
Thank you. Just to clear up my confusion here a little bit. So if I fix my mobile home to my real property, then it can be mortgaged like a normal residential house and sold like a regular residential structured house. Is that correct?
Yes, Chairman, Senator Meyer, that is actually correct. What happens once you affix it and go through the process of having a structural engineer certify that it is considered a permanent foundation for the local area, and different areas have different standards for which you have to affix that to, and those are set by HUD. And once you do have that affixed and you have that structural report, then you would be able to secure it, the property as, and be able to contain it as real property, which would be able to deed the note and also take a mortgage on it.
Okay, and I, if I may, Mr. Chairman, yes, absolutely. And I see all sorts of advantage there, you know, as when you sell it, it's easier to get a loan on it. And am I assuming then too, since it is now treated similar to a house, that when it's sold, it will be inspected to make sure it's affixed safely, properly, and make sure it has working fire alarms and all the same requirements that a normal single unit house would go if you were going to sell a house.
Senator Meyer, you are correct in the sense that when you do go through the process, and once we have to secure the property as collateral, we do have to go through the process of the lender requires a actual inspection of the property. Given certain types of property, we automatically require a full, not only a home inspection, but also an appraisal, and then to certify that all these have been met, which is also a CO2 sensor as well as a smoke detector in two different places within the property.
Okay, well, that's good. That's important. As I mentioned earlier, unfortunately, my district has had several mobile home fires where deaths have occurred. A lot of times, too, it's just from the pipes being frozen and the folks trying to unfreeze the pipes, and I'm sure that would be part of the inspection process. Now then, you know, those are all the benefits, which is all good. So the downside potentially could be what we talked about earlier, that now this property is looked at as more valuable as a kind of a house since it's affixed rather than a vehicle since it's on wheels and can be easily moved. So the downside would be then potentially your property taxes would go up. Is that correct?
Senator Meyer, that is correct. I think as a downside, I think that would increase their property value. But in the interim, to kind of offset that, in my research, I've gone through some scenarios, and if you take the offset of the difference of interest rate in some of these scenarios, I wouldn't say it's a break-even point, but I think it offsets some of that amount of the payment they'll incur by way of increased property taxes, and they'd save it on the side of interest on their mortgage.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Senator Passavant has a question.
Sure. In your comment on access to credit, how important a factor is it that the interest to be paid under this home loan would be subject to the federal tax benefits where they are not subject to those federal tax benefits if it's a vehicle loan or a personal loan?
You know, Senator, I'm not familiar with the exact tax benefits that would be associated with that. If there's someone else on the phone that might be able to assist with that.
In other words, a mortgage interest deduction that regular homeowners get. So in other words, you have, the way it is now, you have higher rates of interest and no deduction for the home interest, and so now you're trying to force it down to these lower value properties to where you get lower rates of interest and you give them access to the federal tax benefits that are consistent with federal law. So I'm just trying to, in the access to credit issue that you were referencing, how important is that federal tax benefit that is afforded home loans?
Senator, I guess I misunderstood your question. I understand you now. In the sense that where you go through and you get to receive the tax benefits for mortgage interest and also any property taxes paid on real property, I think that does open up a little bit as far as having the ability to also help mediate some of that cost for them. And, of course, it's a case by case. I'm not a CPA by any means, but it does have some benefit in the sense that it opens up the ability to have them have a tax deduction in the sense of for real property. Does that answer your question? Or?
Yeah. In other words, I think the short answer is, in my mind, the whatever the taxpayer's marginal tax rate, that's the benefit that they get for the interest that's paid in a year. And so that's additional cash flow to the homeowner.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Horman. We're joined by the bill sponsor, Senator French. Senator French, did you want to give any words of you wanted to give us on this bill?
Thank you. For the record, Senator Hollis French, represent West Anchorage in the State Senate. I don't know where I am in the discussion, but I'm just happy to have the committee's attention on this bill. We pushed it last year. It's complicated, but we've had excellent working relationship with the Department of Motor Vehicles, Department of Administration, and the Wells Fargo, the interested bank. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. We have a couple more people signed up, looks like just for questions. Pat Green and Jeff Harris. Pat, did you have any testimony you wanted to give?
Mr. Chairman, no, I don't have anything to add.
Okay, and Jeff Harris? Did you have any testimony you wanted to present?
Yeah, I just had one point of interest.
If you could put yourself on the record, please.
2007.
If you could just...
66 loans come into Wells Fargo. And we had 9 loans that actually came in 2009. In 2010, we had 35 loans. So we're seeing an increase in volume of loans coming in from Alaska. And we've had 5 so far in 2011, so we're ahead of last year's pace. And of the 66 total, we've only been able to approve 21 loans. So over half of the loans, Wells Fargo has not been able to fund.
And just for the record, you're Jeff Harris, and you're representing Wells Fargo?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Did you have any other testimony you wanted to give us, sir?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Questions? Okay, seeing none, is there anyone else online wanting to testify? Seeing none, anyone else in the room wanting to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony for now. It'll be invited testimony only after this. And Senator Giesel, do you have a question?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Could I just ask Jeff Harris a question? He said over half of the loans weren't funded. Why weren't they funded?
Well, let's go reopen public testimony. And Mr. Harris, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, did you hear the question?
Yes. The reason that we didn't have a method to, there's no formal procedure to convert the manufacturer home to real estate, so we were not able to secure the collateral in those situations, and we were not able to fund a loan due to those reasons.
Other questions? Okay, now we'll close public testimony. And no one else in the room wanting to testify? And any final comments by the bill sponsor?
Just that, as you know, mobile homes are affordable housing for thousands and thousands of Alaskans. It's how you many folks, myself included, moved from a rental apartment into a mobile home to live for a few years before I saved up the money to buy a half of a duplex. So it's just one step in the process for many, many people in making these housing devices mortgageable and financeable. Are obviously, it's very important both to the individual and to the banks.
Okay, thank you. Senator Meyer.
Chairman, I just want to thank the sponsor for bringing this bill forward. I think this has been an oversight for some time in our real estate market, and I don't look at mobile homes as vehicles, which is what they're currently classified as. And they're people's homes, like you said. So thank you for bringing this.
Thank you.
Yeah, I said at the beginning, it's an important piece of legislation that will affect the lives of thousands of Alaskans. I probably have more mobile homes in my district than probably any other district in the state.
It's available for co-sponsorship, Mr.
Okay, and if members have proposed amendments, if you could please provide them to my aide, Michelle. She has by noon tomorrow, which is pretty ambitious, but we're happy to work with committee members if you do have changes you'd like to see. And with that, we're adjourned.